Welcome, Curious Minds, to The Deep Dive. Today, we're embarking on an in-depth exploration of something truly foundational to our modern lives. Yet it often operates just out of sight, the vast, intricate world of freight rail. And right at the heart of our discussion today is CSX Corporation, a genuine titan of transportation, you know, a critical artery of the North American supply chain.
Absolutely, a huge player.
CSX, as many of you probably know, is one of the continent's premier transportation companies. Its roots, well, they delve deep into American railroading history, tracing back to the earliest iron horses. But its modern form really emerged in 1980 through that significant merger of the Chessie System and Seaboard Coastline Industries. It's not just a company, it's really a network that quite literally keeps the gears of our economy moving.
Mm-hmm. And our mission today really is to truly unpack the complex investment research and detailed analysis surrounding CSX. We want to extract those essential nuggets of knowledge that reveal its fundamental business model, maybe dissect its competitive landscape a bit, understand its financial health, and peer into its future trajectory. We'll show you what makes this company tick, but also I think what makes this entire industry such a critical backbone of the North American economy.
Absolutely. We're going to pull out some surprising facts and key insights from the material you've shared, giving you hopefully a real shortcut to being incredibly well-informed about this fascinating and frankly indispensable sector. Let's dive deep into CSX. 1. Unpacking CSX, the company's core operations and network power. So at its core, CSX is all about rail-based freight transportation and logistics. Pretty straightforward, right? They generate revenue by charging customers to move goods. But while that sounds simple, the pricing model is incredibly nuanced. It factors in everything from the type of cargo, is it chemicals, cars, grain, its weight, the distance it travels, and even like the specific service needs a customer might have. Speed, specialized equipment.
Right, exactly. It's not just point A to point B pricing. It's much more dynamic than that. It's almost like a three-dimensional chess game with freight cars.
Good analogy.
And what's truly fascinating here is just the sheer diversity of what they move across their network. CSX's operations are mainly divided into three main business lines. The first, and you could argue the most resilient, is merchandise. This segment is incredibly diverse. We're talking shipping a wide array of goods for industries ranging from chemicals, automotive components, agricultural products, minerals, fertilizers, forest products, even heavy metals and equipment.
Wow, that's a broad mix.
It is. And that breadth acts as a crucial resilience factor, you see. It kind of insulates them against significant downturns in any single sector. We saw this play out really well in 2023, where their merchandise segment showed a 2% overall volume growth. And even more telling was the significant strength in automotive shipments. They surged by 15%, reflecting the recovery in vehicle production. Plus, both minerals and metals and equipment grew by a solid 6% tied to, you know, infrastructure demand. So this diversity is a powerful shock absorber for the business.
Okay, so that's merchandise. What's next?
Then you have coal. This involves transporting domestic coal, coke, and iron ore primarily to power plants and manufacturers. But interestingly, a really significant portion of this segment is actually dedicated to export coal, moving it to deep water ports for global markets. In 2023, the coal segment actually saw an 8% increase in volume, largely buoyed by that higher international export demand. So exports are key there.
Right, compensating for maybe domestic trends.
Potentially, yes. It adds a different dynamic. Finally, there's intermodal. This segment is quite innovative, actually. It combines the inherent economic advantages of long-haul rail, think fuel efficiency, cost, with the short-haul flexibility and speed of trucks. Imagine manufactured consumer goods traveling across the country in large containers that can be seamlessly transferred between trains and trucks at a vast network of terminals.
Ah, so it's that train-to-truck handoff.
Precisely. This service directly competes with long-haul trucking and is absolutely critical for connecting global supply chains with our domestic consumption centers. It's basically the modern bridge between a ship arriving in port and the goods reaching your local store shelves.
Gotcha. And beyond those three big ones, merchandise, coal, intermodal, you mentioned CSX, also has some interesting ancillary revenue streams.
They do, yeah. They operate a trucking subsidiary called Quality Carriers. They specialize in a very specific niche, bulk liquid chemical transportation. Then there's CSX Real Property, which effectively manages their extensive real estate holdings. They handle everything from sales to leasing properties adjacent to their rail lines. Smart use of assets.
Makes sense. Leverage what you've got.
Exactly. And of course, there are other essential charges like demurrage, which is basically like a late fee customers pay if they hold on to rail cars longer than allowed. Think of it as a parking ticket for a train car. And they also charge for specialized switching services. So yeah, it's a pretty comprehensive approach to leveraging their assets and their network beyond just moving the main freight. 1.2, the unrivaled network footprint and strategic advantage.
Okay, so let's talk about that network, because the foundation of CSX's business, its primary competitive advantage, really is its vast and strategically located rail network, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's fundamental. We're talking about approximately 20,000 route miles of track. It's predominantly concentrated in the eastern United States, but with vital extensions into Ontario and Quebec in Canada. This physical infrastructure isn't just lines on a map, it's the bedrock of their market power.
And when you look at that geographic footprint, the significance is just immediately clear. It connects every single major metropolitan area in the eastern U.S., which is a region, by the way, where nearly two-thirds of the entire nation's population resides.
Exactly. That's immense reach. It provides a natural density of economic activity that few other transportation modes can even come close to matching.
Unbelievable scale.
It is. This dense network provides unparalleled access to key economic hubs. It links more than 70 ocean, river, and lake ports with major population centers and industrial facilities. And to really solidify its indispensability, it connects with over 240 short line and regional railroads, effectively extending its reach even further. So this isn't just a railroad. It's an indispensable national connector. It acts like a circulatory system for goods across a massive economic area. 1.3, operational efficiency, the key metrics of railroading.
So with such a massive, you know, unreplicable network, the next logical question is, how do they even begin to measure its efficiency? How do they ensure service quality? The rail industry, and CSX in particular, uses some critical performance indicators, KPIs, to track operational efficiency and service quality. These aren't just obscure figures. They're really the pulse of the network.
Yeah, they are. And these metrics are fascinating because they give you a real-time snapshot of network fluidity and asset utilization. First, there's train velocity, measured in miles per hour. This tracks the average speed of a train from its origin to its destination, and importantly, it includes all stops for crew changes or adding and removing cars.
Okay, so not just top speed.
No, average speed over the whole journey. In recent data, CSX's system-wide average train velocity was around 18.7 miles per hour. Now, 18.7 miles per hour might not sound fast if you're thinking about a car, but for a 10,000-ton train moving thousands of tons of freight, well, it's a testament to incredible logistical coordination. Consistent flow, not raw speed, is really the ultimate measure of efficiency in the rail world.
Right, keeping things moving steadily.
Precisely. Then we have terminal dwell. This is measured in hours, and it's the average time a rail car spends stationary at a terminal, waiting to be picked up, switched, whatever. The lower the dwell time, the more efficiently assets are moving, and the more fluid the network is. CSX's terminal dwell, according to latest reports, was about 9.7 hours.
9.7 hours, okay.
And finally, cars online. This just represents the total number of active freight cars on the network at any given time. It's a measure of how much rolling stock they're actively deploying.
It's incredible how crucial these numbers are. They aren't just for internal reports. They're absolutely critical for assessing service reliability and ultimately their competitiveness in the marketplace. And what really stands out from the sources is CSX's significant year-over-year improvements in 2023. Train velocity up a solid 12% and terminal dwell down an impressive 17%.
Mm-hmm. Those are big moves.
Those are concrete signs of enhanced network performance. And for a business where reliability is absolutely king, that's a major win. 1.4, the commodity mix and strategic tension.
This brings up an important point. What does CSX's revenue mix actually tell us about its exposure to the broader economy? It's intrinsically linked, you know, both to the cyclical industrial economy and these long-term secular commodity trends. The diversity within its merchandise segment, with all those different industries it serves, really helps hedge against weakness in any single market.
Like that shock absorber you mentioned.
Exactly. For example, the strong performance in automotive and minerals in 2023 was directly tied to the recovery in vehicle production and increased demand for materials needed for infrastructure projects. That shows its leverage to manufacturing and construction cycles.
But here's where it gets really interesting, right? The structural tension within CSX's business model.
Mm.
On one hand, you've got this exciting growth potential in merchandise and intermodal. But then you have this long-term secular decline of their domestic coal business.
Yeah, that's the big one.
It's a fundamental shift in U.S. power generation, moving away from coal towards natural gas and renewables. So while export coal can certainly provide periods of strength, like we saw in 2023, that domestic utility coal franchise is essentially in what the company calls managed decline, a clear headwind they have to navigate.
Exactly. This creates a very clear strategic imperative for CSX. They absolutely must grow their merchandise and intermodal volume significantly to offset the eventual decline of those domestic coal revenues. Attracting new industrial facilities to locate directly along their rail lines, industrial development, and converting freight from highways onto their intermodal network. These aren't just growth opportunities. They are fundamental to CSX's long-term sustainability and future revenue trajectory. It's a race against time, in a way, to ensure new growth outpaces the natural decline of an old staple. Two, the North American freight rail industry. Structure and shifting sands.
Okay, so let's zoom out a bit and look at the North American freight rail industry as a whole. It's definitely a mature, very capital-intensive sector. It truly is the backbone of the continent's economy. And what's striking about it are its characteristics. Incredibly high barriers to entry, a highly consolidated market structure, and as you mentioned, a deep sensitivity to broader macroeconomic conditions. You can almost feel the pulse of the economy through rail freight volumes.
That's right. The industry operates as a classic oligopoly. It's dominated by a very small number of large players. We have seven Class I railroads defined by the Surface Transportation Board, or STB, based on annual operating revenues above, I think it's $490 million currently. Of these, six are the major freight-focused carriers, BNSF and Union Pacific out west, CSX and Norfolk Southern here in the east, and then Canadian National Railway and Canadian Pacific Kansas City, or CPKC, which are the Canadian-based transcontinental railroads.
Right, the big players. And this consolidation you're talking about isn't new. It's the result of decades of mergers and acquisitions. But here's a defining characteristic that really sets the U.S. freight rail system apart. It's almost entirely privately owned and operated. Think about that for a second. These private companies are responsible for maintaining and upgrading their own vast infrastructure, nearly 140,000 route miles of track. That's a staggering responsibility.
It is, and that's exactly why those barriers to entry are so formidable. This requires immense and continuous capital investment. The industry collectively spends nearly $25 billion annually, which is approximately 19% of its revenues just on CapEx, just to maintain and enhance capacity.
$25 billion a year?
Yeah. To put that staggering number into perspective, that's more than the entire GDP of many small nations just to keep the arteries of North America flowing. That sheer scale, combined with the complexity of existing networks, makes it virtually impossible for new competitors to emerge. You can't just decide to build a new transcontinental railroad on a whim. 2.2, economic sensitivity and current headwinds.
Okay, so we know it's sensitive to the economy.
Extremely. What's fascinating here is how much the freight rail industry serves as a reliable barometer of the broader industrial economy. It's highly cyclical. Rail freight volumes, especially for merchandise and intermodal traffic, correlate very closely with levels of manufacturing activity, consumer spending, and construction. When the economy sneezes, rail definitely feels it immediately.
We've certainly seen that reflected in recent economic data. The Association of American Railroads, the AAR, reported in July 2025 that while total carloads showed some modest growth, intermodal volumes actually started to decline. This points directly to softer consumer demand and persistent weakness in the manufacturing sector. I mean, the ISM manufacturing PMI, a key indicator, it's been below 50, meaning contraction for 30 of the past 32 months.
Oof, that's a long stretch.
It is. That signals very little forward momentum for the industrial economy that forms the core customer base for these railroads. And it creates a pretty challenging environment for top-line growth.
So I think it's fair to characterize the near-term demand environment as quite challenging and, frankly, uncertain. While some industry forecasts project significant long-term growth, one report even estimated the North American rail freight market could grow by, what was it, $37.53 billion between 2025 and 2029, a compound annual growth rate of 7.3%.
That sounds pretty optimistic right now.
It does appear optimistic given the current conditions.
Sure.
Those forecasts are highly dependent on a pretty robust economic recovery kicking in. So it's a tricky balancing act between that long-term potential and the current economic realities impacting daily volumes. 2.3, regulatory environment and a potential seismic shift. The merger dynamic.
This brings us to the regulatory environment, which is huge for this industry. The U.S. freight rail system is under the strict oversight of the Surface Transportation Board, the STB. They cover freight rates, service, and critically, railroad mergers. And the STB has historically been very reluctant to approve major Class I mergers. That stance has really maintained the current market structure for over two decades now. It's been a period of relative calm in terms of consolidation.
But that long-standing equilibrium is now facing what could be its most significant potential disruption in a generation. In July 2025, Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern confirmed they were in discussions for an $85 billion merger.
Wow, $85 billion.
Yeah. If approved, this would create the first truly transcontinental railroad in the United States. It's a monumental potential shift in the industry's landscape.
That's a profound implication, isn't it? This deal would fundamentally reshape the competitive landscape. You'd have a network of immense scale and scope, directly challenging the other existing transcontinental carrier, CPKC. It's a potential game changer for the entire North American freight map.
It absolutely is. And this development immediately places intense strategic pressure on the remaining major players, specifically CSX and BNSF. Industry analysts widely expect that a UPNS combination would pretty much compel BNSF and CSX to pursue their own merger to create a competing transcontinental network.
To keep pace, basically.
Exactly. Otherwise, they'd be at a significant competitive disadvantage in terms of network reach and single-line service offerings for customers. Now, while such mega-mergers would undeniably face intense scrutiny from the STB, shippers, labor unions, the whole nine yards, the mere possibility has introduced a powerful new dynamic. It potentially forces CSX into a strategic imperative to consolidate, rather than simply managing its existing operations. It's no longer just about optimizing. It could become about strategically positioning for survival in a radically new competitive era. 2.4, competition with trucking and the role of technology.
So that's the potential rail versus rail dynamic.
Right.
But on a day-to-day basis, you mentioned trucking is the main competitor.
Yeah, for many movements, rail's primary competitor isn't another railroad, it's the trucking industry. Trucks offer greater flexibility, that crucial last-mile delivery, and they're often faster for shorter distances, especially for time-sensitive smaller shipments.
Right. But rail has some significant structural advantages, too, especially for the heavy long-distance freight. Think about cost and fuel efficiency. Here's a striking statistic from the research. A freight train is approximately four times more fuel efficient than a truck. It can move one ton of freight about 470 miles on a single gallon of diesel fuel.
That's incredible efficiency.
It really is. And that efficiency also translates into a smaller carbon footprint, which is becoming a growing factor for many shippers who are increasingly focused on sustainability in their supply chains.
Definitely. And the competitive balance between rail and truck is dynamic. It's constantly shifting. It's influenced by factors like fuel prices, labor availability in the trucking sector, big issue there, and overall trucking rates. Recent reports indicate that trucking rates have stabilized somewhat and capacity might be tightening, which could actually lead to some freight shifting back to rail as it becomes more economically attractive again.
Interesting. So that could improve CSX's competitive positioning.
It could, yeah, allowing them to potentially win back some market share lost when trucking rates were perhaps slower.
And technology is playing an increasingly vital role here too, right? Kind of blurring some of those competitive lines.
Absolutely. Railroads are pouring investments into digital technologies, automation, and predictive maintenance. All of this is aimed at optimizing traffic planning, improving asset utilization, and, crucially, enhancing safety. We're talking about things like automated inspection portals that use cameras to scan trains, advanced wayside detectors that use sensors to identify potential problems on moving trains.
Like listening for bearing failures.
Exactly. Detecting issues before they become costly problems or cause derailments, it's all about leveraging data to keep those trains flowing safely and efficiently. 3. CSX's competitive edge, from PSR to service reliability. So circling back to CSX specifically, let's reiterate its strong competitive position. It's one of the two dominant Class I railroads in the vital eastern U.S. economic region. And its primary competitive mode, as we discussed, isn't just its size, it's its physical network, those approximately 20,000 route miles.
And this network is essentially unreplicable, isn't it? The sheer capital cost, the labyrinthine regulatory hurdles, the enormous challenges of acquiring land for something of that scale across multiple states, it creates nearly insurmountable barriers to entry for any potential new rail competitor.
Mm.
This effectively insulates CSX from new rail entrants and creates a powerful network effect. The value of being connected to the CSX network grows as more customers and locations are served. It's kind of like a utility.
Mm.
Once built, it's virtually unchallenged by new entrants of the same type.
Exactly. And within the eastern U.S., that market structure is effectively a duopoly with Norfolk Southern. This structure naturally limits direct rail-to-rail price competition in many corridors, which, paradoxically perhaps, allows both carriers to focus intensely on service and efficiency as key differentiators, rather than just constantly undercutting each other on price. It elevates the competition to who can be faster, more reliable, easier to do business with. 3.2, the PSR evolution, from disruption to service excellence.
Okay, and here's where it gets really interesting again. The dramatic transformation of CSX's competitive position, starting back in 2017, was something called Precision Scheduled Railroading, or PSR. This wasn't just an operational tweak. It sounds like it was a full-blown revolution for them.
It really was. PSR has been a defining characteristic of North American railroading in recent years, and CSX's journey with it can definitely be broken into two distinct phases. The first was the initial disruption phase in 2017. Under the late CEO E. Hunter Harrison, the rollout was incredibly rapid, very aggressive, aimed purely at radically improving efficiency and slashing costs. But in its initial implementation, well, it caused significant service issues, network congestion, and frankly, it damaged customer relationships because the changes to how freight moved were so abrupt.
Yeah, I remember reading about shippers being pretty unhappy back then.
They were. However, the second phase, starting around 2019 onward and really accelerating under the current CEO, Joe Hinrichs, since 2022, has seen a profound shift in focus. It's about leveraging PSR's efficiency gains to deliver truly consistent and reliable service rather than just focusing solely on cutting costs. And the tangible results are pretty impressive. By 2019, CSX had achieved a U.S. Class I record operating ratio of 58.4%. That's a testament to the model's cost-cutting power, a dramatic 11 percentage point improvement from pre-PSR levels.
An 11-point improvement in OR is huge. But what we've seen more recently, and what's really important for you listening to understand, are the service improvements that have stemmed from this refined approach. In 2023, for example, their carload trip plan performance, which is a critical measure of how often freight arrives on time, jumps significantly to 84%, up from just 64% in 2022. That's a big leap.
Massive improvement in reliability.
And intermodal trip plan performance also improved robustly to 95% from 90%. And here's the kicker, really. In 2024, CSX was the only Class I railroad to see its freight volumes return to pre-pandemic levels. That absolutely demonstrates how their improved service is translating directly into commercial success and winning back crucial customer trust. This isn't just about internal numbers, it's about market share. 3.3, benchmarking CSX against its peers.
Okay, so that's the qualitative picture of their operational evolution, but how does CSX actually stack up quantitatively against its Class I peers? Let's look at the numbers.
Yeah, let's compare them, especially against their main eastern rival, Norfolk Southern.
Right. So if we compare it directly, especially against Norfolk Southern NSC, we see some clear differences, but also similarities in scale and profitability. In terms of scale, CSX's market capitalization, around $65.3 billion as of mid-2025, is quite similar to Norfolk Southern's at $61.7 billion. They are, however, considerably smaller than the Western giant Union Pacific UP, which is at about $130.1 billion. But looking at 2023 revenue, CSX's $14.7 billion was actually greater than Norfolk Southern's $12.2 billion. So within the East, they are closely matched on market cap, with CSX having a slight edge on recent revenue.
Okay, so more size in the East. What about profitability?
In terms of profitability, CSX has maintained a distinct advantage. For the last 12 months ending mid-2025, CSX's operating margin was 37.1% compared to Norfolk Southern's 34.4%. That indicates superior cost control and overall efficiency in its operations, likely showing the longer-term impact of their PSR implementation really sticking to the bottom line.
Okay, better margins. But I think it's the granular operational metrics that truly reveal a significant, tangible advantage for CSX. This is where their refined PSR really seems to shine through.
You're absolutely right. Let's look at train velocity. For recent reporting periods, CSX was at 18.7 mile per hour. During a similar period, Norfolk Southern reported 22.2 mile per hour. Now, it's crucial to note here, as the reports often caution, different railroads can use slightly different methodologies to calculate this metric, so making direct, precise comparisons can be challenging.
Okay, so maybe velocity isn't the best direct comparison. What about dwell time?
Exactly. Terminal dwell is where CSX truly differentiates itself, and the difference is stark. For that same recent period, CSX's average terminal dwell time was a mere 9.7 hours. Compare that to Norfolk Southern, which reported a terminal dwell of 22.1 hours.
Oh, wait. 9.7 versus 22.1?
Yeah.
That's more than double the time spent sitting in a yard at NSC compared to CSX.
Precisely. This means CSX is processing cars through its terminals more than twice as fast as its primary competitor. This isn't just an internal efficiency metric, it's a competitive weapon. Think about it from a customer perspective. Your goods spend less than half the time sitting idle in a CSX yard compared to their main competitor in the East. That translates directly into more predictable, faster supply chains for customers, a potential game changer in today's just-in-time focused economy.
So what we're really talking about here is that the substantial dwell advantage is a direct outcome of PSR's refined focus on minimizing idle time and keeping cars moving. It translates directly into a more reliable and faster service product for their customers, which then underpins CSX's vastly improved trip plan performance and its ability to potentially regain market share. This operational superiority isn't just internal efficiency, it's a tangible competitive advantage.
Exactly right. It allows CSX to compete far more effectively, especially when service is the key differentiator. 4. Financial performance and navigating economic headwinds. So let's shift to the financials. CSX's financial performance over the past decade truly tells a story of, first, profound operational transformation, followed by a period of navigating significant macroeconomic volatility. The implementation of Precision Scheduled Railroading, PSR, clearly marks an inflection point in the company's profitability and efficiency. And those benefits are now being rigorously tested by the current cyclical headwinds we've discussed.
Okay, let's break down this decade of transformation using the numbers provided in the research. We can definitely see three distinct periods. First, there was the pre-PSR era from roughly 2015 to 2016. During this time, the company had a pretty high and stable cost structure. Its operating ratio, or OR, where lower is better, stubbornly hovered around 70%. This really indicated a mature business with pretty limited operating leverage, meaning it was hard for profits to grow significantly faster than revenues, kind of stuck in a range.
Pretty static.
Then came the PSR implementation from 2017 to 2019. This was a profound structural break. Despite revenues remaining relatively flat during this period, the operating ratio began a steep descent. It fell dramatically from 69.4% in 2016 to a U.S. Class I record of 58.4% in 2019. That's a dramatic improvement of over 11 percentage points. It fundamentally enhanced the company's earnings power by resetting its entire cost structure. A complete reengineering.
A massive shift in efficiency.
And finally, we have the post-PSR and macroeconomic volatility period from 2020 to mid-2025. Here, the hard-won benefits of that new, leaner cost structure were truly put to the test. We saw the rapid onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, a subsequent sharp economic recovery, then significant inflationary pressures, supply chain chaos, and a series of operational disruptions, like the bridge collapse and hurricanes. Revenue actually surged to a peak of $14.85 billion in 2022. However, the operating ratio has since risen from its 2019 low, settling at 63.9% in 2024, as the company contended with higher costs for labor and materials alongside those network disruptions.
So the efficiency gains stuck, but external factors pushed the OR back up a bit from that record low.
Exactly, 4.2. Recent performance, 2022, mid-2025. Illustrating operating leverage.
This recent period, from 2022 to mid-2025, has been particularly challenging, no doubt about it. CSX's financial results clearly reflect that softer macroeconomic environment, volatile commodity prices, and those specific operational hurdles that have undeniably impacted performance.
Let's walk through the revenue by segment data again to really illustrate this recent pressure. For full year 2023, revenue edged down 1% to $14.7 billion. This was largely driven by lower intermodal storage revenue, reduced fuel surcharges as fuel prices moderated, and weaker global coal prices. Those headwinds actually more than offset the positive contributions from the 2% volume growth in merchandise and that 8% volume growth in coal we mentioned earlier.
Right.
Consequently, operating income fell 8% to $5.6 billion, reflecting both that lower revenue and persistent cost inflation.
So volumes up in key areas, but pricing surcharges pulled revenue down overall.
Right. The pressure on the top line continued into full year 2024, with revenue again declining 1% to $14.5 billion and operating income falling 5% to $5.3 billion on an adjusted basis. This performance was heavily impacted by some significant external shocks, those major hurricanes, the Baltimore Bridge collapse, which severely disrupted key network routes and incurred significant costs for repairs and rerouting.
Yeah, those were major unexpected hits.
And the trend has persisted into mid-2025. For the second quarter of 2025, revenue decreased 3% year-over-year to $3.57 billion. What's more significant, though, is that operating income fell a steeper 11% to $1.28 billion. This resulted in a 3.2 percentage point year-over-year contraction in the operating margin, down to 35.9%. The main drivers behind this were continued weakness in export coal prices, lower fuel surcharges again, and a 2% decline in merchandise volume this time.
Okay, this set of numbers perfectly illustrates the concept of operating leverage, both positive and negative. While PSR successfully created a structurally lower cost base, which certainly enhances profitability during periods of revenue growth, it also amplifies the impact of revenue declines. See, a significant portion of a railroad's costs are fixed think track maintenance, signal systems, property taxes. These don't fluctuate much with volume day to day, so when revenue falls due to factors like lower fuel surcharges or weaker volumes, these fixed costs largely remain, causing profits to fall at a faster rate than revenue.
Ah, so the profit drop is magnified on the way down.
Exactly. That 11% drop in operating income on only a 3% revenue decline in Q2 2025 is a textbook example of negative operating leverage at work. So while CSX's margins are indeed sustainably higher than they were in the pre-PSR era, their stability through an economic cycle is not guaranteed. This makes pricing discipline and rigorous variable cost control absolutely paramount, especially in challenging economic times. 5. Growth strategies and forward momentum.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about the dramatic impact of precision scheduled railroading. Let's revisit it briefly, because it's truly an operating philosophy, right? Designed to maximize asset utilization and network efficiency.
Right.
Its core tenets are fascinating. Shifting the focus from the train as a whole to optimizing the individual rail car. Adhering to fixed transportation plans, minimizing time spent idling in rail yards, and ultimately running fewer but longer trains. It's a logistical puzzle designed for maximum flow.
And the quantifiable results of this implementation were both profound and rapid, as we touched on. First, the profitability transformation was immense. That operating ratio falling from 69.4% in 2016 to the record 58.4% in 2019, a structural improvement of over 11 percentage points, fundamentally resetting the company's cost base. They just became a much leaner machine.
Yep.
Second, in terms of asset utilization, PSR allowed CSX to handle a similar amount of freight with significantly fewer assets. In just the first 3 years, they reduced their active locomotive fleet by over 30% and shed thousands of rail cars. That directly led to lower capital expenditures and lower maintenance costs. Fewer things to fix and buy.
Doing more with less, essentially.
Basically, yes. And finally, on service metric improvement, while that initial transition was definitely disruptive for customers, the long-term effect has been remarkably positive. As you mentioned, by year-end 2023, train velocity improved by 12% and terminal dwell by 17% compared to the prior year, indicating a much more fluid and efficient network that ultimately delivers better for customers. 5.2, One CSX. From efficiency to service-driven growth. Now, building on that foundation of operational excellence, the current leadership team, headed by CEO Joe Hinrichs, has introduced this new strategy they call One CSX. This isn't just a new slogan. It seems to represent a profound cultural and operational evolution. It shifts the focus from purely cutting costs to leveraging that hard-won operational efficiency and discipline as a platform to genuinely win in the marketplace through superior service.
And at the core of this One CSX strategy is fostering teamwork and employee engagement, which is really interesting. Management's belief, outlined in their communications, is that a more engaged, collaborative workforce is ultimately what delivers more reliable and consistent service for customers. It's a compelling idea. Happy employees lead to better service, which leads to more satisfied, stickier customers.
Mm-hmm. That service focus then drives two primary growth objectives. First, modal conversion. They aim to win market share by converting long-haul truck freight, which often faces issues like driver shortages, highway congestion, rising fuel costs, onto their more fuel-efficient and hopefully increasingly reliable intermodal rail network.
Taking freight off the highway.
Exactly. And second, industrial development. They are actively working to attract new manufacturing, distribution, and other industrial facilities to actually locate directly along their rail lines. It's about growing their customer base literally from the ground up, by integrating them directly into the rail network from day one. 5.3, strategic investments in infrastructure and technology.
And to support this growth strategy, CSX is making very targeted investments in its infrastructure and technology. It's not just about maintenance anymore. For example, their capital budget for 2023 was $2.3 billion. The vast majority, about $1.7 billion, was dedicated to maintaining the safety and reliability of their core infrastructure. Tracks, bridges, signals. That foundational spending that keeps the lights on and the trains running smoothly.
Right, gotta keep the core strong. But beyond that routine maintenance, they have some key strategic growth projects designed to enhance future capacity and competitiveness. The Howard Street Tunnel in Baltimore is a major one. This project aims to increase the clearance of a crucial old tunnel, allowing for double-stacked intermodal containers to move to and from the Port of Baltimore.
Ah, so they can fit taller container stacks on the trains.
Exactly. This is a critical investment to enhance the competitiveness of their intermodal franchise on the East Coast, allowing them to carry more freight more efficiently per train. They're also pursuing network expansion, like the acquisition of the Meridian and Bigbee Railroad, which expands their reach in the Southeast, a key growth region for industrial development. And on the technology front, they're deploying things like second-generation hot bearing detectors to prevent accidents, autonomous track inspection cars for more frequent and precise checks of their lines, and those automated train inspection portals we mentioned, using high-res imaging to detect defects on moving trains. It's about future-proofing the network and boosting safety and efficiency through tech. 5.4. Pricing power and the industrial development pipeline.
It's also worth noting again that CSX has consistently demonstrated pricing power, which is quite remarkable in any industry, especially a cyclical one. Their recent financial results show that positive pricing has actually partially offset volume declines and lower fuel surcharges. This reflects, I think, both the inherent value of their improved service and, let's be honest, the oligopolistic nature of the industry, where there often aren't many direct rail alternatives for heavy freight.
That's a fair assessment. And what's fascinating here, connecting back to growth, is that industrial development is truly a cornerstone of their long-term strategy. They have this dedicated program called Select Sites, which identifies and certifies properties along their network that are ideally suited and ready for industrial development, environmental checks done, zoning confirmed, etc. CSX actually works directly with potential customers from the initial site selection all the way through construction to bring new rail-served facilities online. This isn't just passive growth waiting for someone to show up. It's active cultivation of new business.
Proactive development. And the pipeline for this sounds really impressive, based on their November 2024 Investor Day presentation. We learned they have over 500 projects in various stages of development. And they estimate these could add anywhere from 150,000 to 300,000 annual carloads by 2027. To put that into perspective, for a company of CSX's scale, that's a potential 1% to 2% net annual volume addition just from new facilities coming online. It's quite significant and represents a robust organic growth driver if they execute.
It really is. It's planting seeds for future volume directly tied to their network. 6. Capital allocation and shareholder returns. A disciplined approach.
Okay, so they generate cash, they invest in the business. What about returns to shareholders? Given the significant free cash flow generated by its now more efficient operating model, CSX has maintained a very disciplined and explicitly shareholder-friendly capital allocation framework. This framework aims to provide substantial returns to investors through both dividends and strategic share repurchases, leveraging their consistent cash generation. And they have a really clear hierarchy of priorities when it comes to spending that cash, as detailed by their CFO, Sean Pelkey, at that November 2024 Investor Day. First, priority one, invest in the business for safety and reliability. This means ensuring core maintenance CapEx is fully funded to keep the network safe and operational. Non-negotiable. Second, invest for high return growth. These are the strategic projects like new terminals, technology upgrades, bolt-on acquisitions like that short line railroad, things that promise strong returns above their cost of capital. And only after those first two priorities are met, priority three is to return excess cash to shareholders through dividends and opportunistic share repurchases. It's a very structured and transparent approach.
It truly is. And this commitment to disciplined investment is backed by their projected three-year capital investment plan, which ranges from $7.5 billion to $8.0 billion. That demonstrates a strong ongoing commitment to reinvesting in the network's health and future capacity, ensuring long-term competitiveness. 6.2, delivering shareholder value. Dividends and buybacks.
And they have a pretty strong, consistent track record of actually delivering those shareholder returns. This isn't just about promises on an Investor Day slide. It's about proven delivery over time.
Absolutely. When it comes to dividends, CSX has achieved 20 consecutive years of dividend increases as of 2024. That kind of track record signals strong management confidence in the long-term cash-generating capability of the business, and it provides a steady, growing income stream for investors. But their share repurchase program has been particularly impactful, maybe even more so than the dividend growth. From the beginning of the PSR transformation in 2017 through the third quarter of 2024, CSX spent a cumulative $23.2 billion on share repurchases.
$23 billion. That's a huge amount.
It is. This aggressive program has effectively retired approximately 33%, one-third of the company's shares outstanding from year-end 2016 levels. That's a significant chunk of the company being bought back by the company itself.
So what does this all mean for you as an investor? Well, the effectiveness of this capital allocation strategy is quite clear. By systematically reducing its share count, CSX has provided a powerful non-operational tailwind to its earnings per share, or EPS, growth. This means that even in periods where net income might be flat or down slightly, EPS can still grow simply because the earnings are being divided by fewer shares outstanding. It directly benefits shareholders on a per-share basis. And it's remarkable that in the first half of 2025 alone, despite those weaker earnings we discussed, the company still managed to return nearly $1.7 billion to shareholders through dividends and buybacks, underscoring their unwavering commitment to this framework. 6.3. A strong balance sheet.
And importantly, underpinning all this is the fact that CSX maintains a strong investment-grade balance sheet. This provides the financial flexibility necessary to execute its strategy effectively through various economic cycles, allowing them to absorb shocks like hurricanes or recessions, and also pursue opportunities when they arise. As of the end of the second quarter of 2025, the company reported long-term debt of around $18.5 billion, which, given their earnings power, they manage comfortably.
So what this ultimately means is their strong and consistent free cash flow generation allows them to comfortably service their debt obligations while simultaneously funding all those important capital expenditures for maintenance and growth and still return substantial cash to shareholders. It's a very healthy and sustainable capital structure that offers resilience and flexibility. 7. Recent challenges and industry headwinds, 2022-2024. The test of resilience. Now, it obviously hasn't been all smooth sailing for CSX recently. The period from 2022 through mid-2025 has presented CSX and the broader rail industry with what could definitely be described as a confluence of challenges, really testing their resilience in significant ways.
That's an apt description. There have been several significant unforeseen operational disruptions that really hit them hard. In 2024, operations were severely impacted by the tragic collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. This event shut down access to a major East Coast port and the second largest export coal facility on the coast, forcing extensive and costly traffic reroutes for CSX for months.
Right, a major disruption.
Then later in 2024, Hurricanes Helene and Milton inflicted substantial damage, particularly on their Blue Ridge subdivision line in North Carolina. The damage was estimated at a whopping $400 million in repairs, and it's required ongoing rerouting of traffic at an additional cost of approximately $10 million per month while those extensive repairs are completed. And even into the first quarter of 2025, management acknowledged that results didn't meet their own expectations due to network congestion stemming from some major construction projects and adverse winter weather, creating bottlenecks in parts of the network.
So while we've heard that there were significant sequential improvements in network fluidity reported in the second quarter of 2025, these disruptions really highlight the network's inherent vulnerability to external shocks, whether it's a natural disaster like a hurricane or an unexpected infrastructure failure like the bridge collapse. It's a complex, interconnected system.
Very much so. Exposed to the elements and unforeseen events. 7.2. Labor relations and macroeconomic pressure. On the labor front, it's interesting. CSX has taken a notably proactive approach recently to improving relations with its workforce. In 2023, it became the first-class railroad to reach agreements providing paid sick leave for its unionized employees, which was a major sticking point in prior industry-wide negotiations that almost led to a strike. This move is clearly part of that One CSX initiative, aimed at fostering a more collaborative and engaged workforce, seemingly recognizing that a happy workforce is ultimately a more productive and reliable one.
Good move for stability. Simultaneously, though, macroeconomically, the companies face significant headwinds. We've seen persistent inflation driving up costs for essential inputs like labor, materials, fuel, and services. And coupled with that, there's been the general economic slowdown we discussed, particularly in the industrial and manufacturing sectors. This has definitely dampened freight demand and contributed to those volume declines in both the merchandise and intermodal segments in recent quarters. It's created a tough double whammy of higher costs and softer demand.
Yeah, margin pressure from both sides. 7.3, commodity-specific challenges. What's also fascinating here is how specific markets have presented their own unique challenges recently. Take coal, for instance. While volumes have been relatively resilient, mostly driven by that strong export demand, CSX's coal revenue has been severely impacted. Why? It's due to a sharp decline in global benchmark coal prices from their peaks, along with lower fuel surcharge revenue that railroads collect based on fuel prices. For example, Q2 2025 saw a 15% year-over-year revenue decline in the coal segment, despite a small 1% increase in volume. Mine production outages have also created challenges for securing consistent export volumes at times. It's a tricky market where volume doesn't always translate directly to revenue dollars.
Right. Price volatility is key there.
Yeah.
What about intermodal?
And then the intermodal segment, as we touched on, has faced intense competitive pressure from a weak trucking market. An oversupply of trucking capacity led to significantly lower spot rates for truck freight over the last year or so. That made it much harder for rail intermodal to compete purely on price, which has constrained intermodal volume growth. When trucking gets really cheap, it inevitably pulls some freight off the rails, especially on shorter lanes.
Makes sense. But despite these numerous headwinds, the storms, the bridge, inflation, weak trucking management has really emphasized their focus on controlling costs where possible and relentlessly improving service. That sequential recovery in operational metrics during the second quarter of 2025 after a difficult first quarter really does suggest an ability to adapt and restore network performance even under pressure. It speaks to the underlying strength and resilience of the operating model, even when external forces are challenging.
They seem to be weathering the storm, so to speak, operationally at least. 8. Key risk factors. What keeps rail executives up at night?
Okay, so this raises an important question. What are the primary risks that could materially impact CSX's business, its financial condition, and its results of operations going forward? As we deep dive into the investment analysis, these are crucial considerations for anyone trying to understand the company's future prospects and potential pitfalls. 8.1. Economic cyclicality and recession sensitivity.
First and foremost, and maybe the most obvious one, is economic cyclicality and recession sensitivity. CSX's financial performance is intrinsically linked to the health of the U.S. and global economies. A significant portion of its freight volume consists of industrial and consumer goods, making the company highly sensitive to business cycles. A recession, or even just a prolonged period of slow economic growth, would very likely lead to reduced shipping volumes, underutilization of the rail network, and significant pressure on revenue and profit margins. This remains the most prominent near-term risk, I'd say.
The economy is always number one for railroads. 8.2. Regulatory and political risks. And as we discussed, the freight rail industry is heavily regulated by the STB, so regulatory and political risks are always a concern.
Exactly. Changes in the legislative or regulatory landscape, for example, new regulations aimed at increasing competition between railroads or imposing price constraints or new safety mandates could negatively impact profitability. Furthermore, those recent merger discussions between Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern have really brought the issue of industry consolidation back to the forefront after decades of stability. The STB's ultimate stance on such a transaction and any subsequent deals it might compel among the remaining players like CSX represents a major long-term uncertainty that could fundamentally alter the competitive environment, creating either new opportunities or significant competitive disadvantages. 8.3. Safety incidents and operational disruptions. Third, the paramount importance of safe operations cannot be overstated in this industry. So, safety incidents and operational disruptions are a huge risk. A major train derailment, especially one involving hazardous materials, could result in substantial costs from cleanup, litigation, regulatory fines, not to mention severe reputational damage that could easily exceed insurance coverage. And as dramatically demonstrated by the events of 2024, the network is also vulnerable to disruptions from severe weather events like hurricanes, floods, or even wildfires, which can damage infrastructure and cause prolonged service interruptions and significant repair costs. It's an ongoing battle against the elements and the potential for human error. 8.4, competition from alternative transportation modes.
You know, we've already talked a lot about the intense day-to-day competition from alternative transportation modes, primarily trucking. But how does that look as a long-term risk?
It remains a significant risk factor. While rail currently enjoys that cost and fuel efficiency advantage in long-haul heavy freight, trucking offers greater flexibility and crucial door-to-door service that rail simply can't match on its own for many types of goods. Longer-term technological advancements in trucking, think about widespread automation or electrification of truck fleets, could potentially erode rail's current cost and fuel efficiency advantages over time. CSX's ability to provide consistently reliable and cost-effective service is absolutely key to defending and growing its market share against this evolving competition. They can't afford to be complacent on service or cost. 8.5. Climate change and environmental regulations. This raises another important question. How does climate change and environmental regulations factor into CSX's risk profile? It's twofold, really. CSX faces risks related to both the physical impacts of climate change and the broader transition to a lower carbon economy. Mm-hmm. Physically, changing weather patterns, more frequent extreme storms, maybe rising sea levels in coastal areas. These could pose long-term threats to its extensive rail infrastructure, potentially requiring costly adaptations. Transitionally, the most significant risk is that secular decline of domestic coal consumption we keep mentioning, as the U.S. power sector continues its shift away from coal-fired generation. This represents a permanent headwind for a historically important revenue stream. Additionally, new emissions regulations targeting the rail industry itself or its customers could potentially increase operating costs or affect demand patterns. 8.6, cybersecurity and technology risks.
Given how much CSX relies on complex technology systems now to manage everything from train dispatching to customer billing and its status as critical national infrastructure, I can imagine cybersecurity and technology risks are a big constant concern.
You're absolutely right. The company is undoubtedly a prime target for cyber attacks, given its vital role in the supply chain and the vast amounts of sensitive operational and customer data it manages. A successful breach could cause significant operational disruptions. Imagine dispatching systems going down, compromise sensitive data, and result in substantial financial penalties and reputational harm. It's a constant, evolving battle for all critical infrastructure providers to stay one step ahead of increasingly sophisticated cyber threats. 8.7, labor relations and potential strikes. And finally, labor relations and potential strikes. Most of CSX's workforce is unionized. While the company has recently made progress in labor relations, notably becoming the first class I to provide paid sick leave across the board, the failure to negotiate acceptable collective bargaining agreements in the future could still lead to labor disputes, work stoppages, or even strikes. A prolonged strike would halt operations, resulting in significant immediate revenue loss and potentially causing long-term damage to customer relationships, possibly pushing shippers to find other, maybe less reliable but available, modes of transportation. Stability on the labor front is key. 9. Valuation analysis, what the market is pricing in.
Okay, so after considering all those operations, strategies, and risks, what is CSX's current valuation telling us? Where does the stock sit? It seems to reflect expectations for a recovery, doesn't it? With multiples at or even slightly above historical averages, it suggests the market is pricing in normalized earnings power and future growth driven by service reliability, rather than simply reacting to the recent pressured results. This seems like a forward-looking view.
That's a good way to put it. If we look at the multiple base valuation as of early August 2025, CSX's trailing 12-month, or TTM, price-to-earnings PE ratio stands at approximately 21 times. What's fascinating here is that this represents a slight premium to its 10-year historical average PE of roughly 18 times. It also trades at a slight premium to its Western peer, Union Pacific, and is valued quite closely to its direct Eastern competitor, Norfolk Southern. The forward PE ratio, based on analyst earnings estimates for the next year, is lower, around 17 times. This suggests that the market does indeed expect earnings growth in the coming year, which helps justify that higher trailing multiple.
Okay, so a bit of a premium on PE. What about other metrics, like EBITDA?
Yeah, looking at enterprise value to EBITDA, CSX's TTM multiple is approximately 12.6 to 13.0 times. This is right in line with its five-year average of around 12.5 times and is very similar to the multiples of its class's IT peers. This metric, which gives you a view of valuation independent of capital structure, indicates a pretty consistent valuation relative to its recent history and within the broader consolidated rail sector. No major divergence there. 9.2. Fundamental valuation considerations. Now, beyond just looking at relative multiples, several fundamental factors are crucial when assessing CSX's intrinsic value and the sustainability of those current valuations. First, consider earnings quality and sustainability. While PSR structurally improved CSX's earnings baseline, the period from 2022 to mid-2025 clearly demonstrated that these earnings are not immune to cyclical pressures. Negative operating leverage, as we discussed, can cause margins to contract sharply when revenue falls. Therefore, to truly assess sustainable earnings power, you really need to try and normalize for the economic cycle and volatile factors like fuel surcharges and global commodity prices, looking beyond the immediate noisy quarter.
Right, look through the cycle.
Second, think about free cash flow yield. Free cash flow generation was significantly weaker in the first half of 2025 compared to the prior year. This was a direct result of both lower net earnings and those elevated capital expenditures, particularly the one-time costs associated with the Blue Ridge subdivision rebuild after the hurricanes. So to accurately assess the underlying FCF yield potential, investors really must adjust for these non-recurring capital outlays. Management has, however, guided for an improvement in FCF generation in the second half of 2025 as those one-time costs subside and operations stabilize.
So FCF needs some adjusting right now.
Exactly. And finally, a significant consideration, and one of the inherent strengths of this business model, is their asset base and replacement cost. As an established Class I railroad, CSX possesses this vast and frankly irreplaceable portfolio of physical assets, thousands of miles of track, numerous terminals, locomotives, rail cars. The replacement cost of this entire network today would be absolutely immense, providing a substantial tangible book value that truly underpins the company's overall valuation. You simply cannot replicate this infrastructure easily or cheaply. 9.3. Key valuation drivers and risks to valuation.
So what's fascinating here is that the market's current valuation of CSX, sitting at that premium to its historical PE average despite the recent earnings weakness, suggests that investors are looking beyond the temporary disruptions of 2024 and early 2025. The valuation appears to be driven by a strong belief that the company's operational improvements under PSR and One CSX are durable, and that earnings will recover and resume their growth trajectory as macroeconomic conditions eventually stabilize and those major capital projects are completed and start contributing.
Exactly. This forward-looking stance makes the stock highly sensitive to the execution of its strategy going forward. Key drivers that could lead to further multiple expansion, or at least support the current one, include sustained market share gains, particularly in merchandise and intermodal, clear evidence of strong returns from their strategic growth investments like the Howard Street Tunnel project, and continued discipline in capital allocation, especially share buybacks. Conversely, risks that could lead to multiple contraction include a failure to maintain that improved service reliability, a deeper than expected economic downturn hitting volumes hard, or any indication that the recent margin pressures proved to be more structural than cyclical, suggesting fundamental weakness rather than just temporary headwinds. 10. Management quality and governance. Steering the ship.
Okay, let's talk about the people steering the ship. The quality of CSX's leadership team and its governance practices are obviously critical factors in the company's ability to execute its strategy and create long-term shareholder value.
Absolutely. The current management team has overseen a significant strategic pivot, as we've discussed, from purely focusing on operational efficiency metrics to a more balanced approach centered on service-led growth. This reflects, I think, a mature understanding of what truly drives customer satisfaction and sustainable profitability in this business. 10.1. Leadership team experience and strategic direction. Let's start at the top with Joseph R. Hinrichs. He became president and chief executive officer in September 2022. What's particularly interesting about Mr. Hinrichs is that he brought a fresh perspective from outside the traditional rail industry. He has over 30 years of experience in global manufacturing and logistics, primarily at Ford Motor Company. So his background is rooted in complex supply chains and large-scale operations, but from a shipper's perspective almost. His tenure so far has really been defined by that One CSX cultural initiative, which prioritizes employee engagement, collaboration with labor unions, and a renewed focus on customer service as the primary drivers of growth. This marks a distinct and important shift from the more internally focused, cost-centric approach of the initial PSR implementation phase under his predecessor.
Interesting background. Then there's Sean Pelkey, the Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. He's a long-tenured CSX executive, having joined the company way back in 2005. He's risen through various leadership roles within the finance department, providing that crucial financial continuity and expertise in the company's capital markets activities, financial planning, and investor relations. He represents the steady hand on the financial tiller, knows the company inside out.
Right, the internal veteran. And Mike Corey, the Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer, is the one responsible for the day-to-day performance of the actual railroad network. Under his operational leadership, those significant improvements in key service metrics we highlighted, like terminal dwell and trip plan performance, occurred throughout 2023. This clearly demonstrates his ability to translate the company's strategic vision into tangible results right on the network, ensuring the trains actually run more reliably. 10.2. Strategic communication and execution consistency.
One thing that really stands out from reviewing their public statements and investor presentations is the management team's commitment to clear and consistent strategic communication. The One CSX message has been a constant theme across their annual reports, press releases, and investor presentations ever since Mr. Hinrichs' appointment. provides a unified vision for the company's direction.
Mm-hmm. And what's also interesting here is their transparency, particularly about recent challenges. They've been very open about the operational difficulties faced in 2024 and early 2025, acknowledging disappointing results while simultaneously highlighting the sequential improvements and recovery efforts that are underway. Their November 2024 Investor Day, for example, provided a very comprehensive and detailed roadmap for the company's growth initiatives and capital allocation plans through 2027. This level of strategic clarity and consistent messaging helps build credibility and allows investors and customers to track the company's progress against its own stated goals, fostering trust even when times are tough. 10.3. Corporate governance and shareholder alignment. And finally, on governance, CSX's framework appears to strongly emphasize its role in safeguarding shareholder interests. The most direct evidence of this alignment is their capital allocation policy we discussed, which prioritizes reinvestment in the business for safety and growth, while consistently returning excess cash to owners. The consistent return of substantial capital through that growing dividend and the very large-scale share repurchase program demonstrates a clear focus on creating shareholder value over the long term.
And it's truly impressive how consistent they've been. The repurchase of one-third of the company's outstanding shares since 2017 is a testament to this commitment. It has been a primary driver of their EPS growth and overall shareholder returns, even when net income itself has faced headwinds from the economy or disruptions. So, management's demonstrated ability to generate significant free cash flow, even in tougher times, and their disciplined approach in returning a large portion of that cash to its owners really exemplifies a management team and a board that seem deeply aligned with the interests of their shareholders. Outro. And there you have it, a true deep dive into CSX Corporation. We've journeyed from understanding its fundamental role as a transportation giant, through its dramatic operational transformations with precision scheduled railroading, and now one CSX, its place in a deeply consolidated industry now facing potentially seismic shifts from mergers, and its disciplined financial strategy and shareholder returns. You hopefully now have a much deeper understanding of what makes this critical company tick, and how it fits into the broader economic landscape.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, understanding companies like CSX isn't just about investing, is it? It's key to understanding the foundational elements of our entire economy. It's literally how raw materials get to factories, how finished products reach your doorstep, and how global trade physically flows across a continent day in and day out. It's the intricate interplay between deep, hard-to-replicate infrastructure, ongoing technological advancements, and those ever-shifting global demands that truly defines our modern supply chains.
So what does this all mean for you? Here's a final thought to perhaps ponder on your own. Given the real potential for a new era of transcontinental railroad mega-mergers, alongside the ongoing complex transition away from historically dominant commodities like domestic coal, how might the very map of North American freight and, by extension, the flow of goods we rely on and the economic landscape of the continent itself look radically different a decade from now? And what knock-on impacts might that have on everything from the cost and availability of your consumer goods to the broader environmental future? It's a lot to think about, isn't it?